Case number 12-5223, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington Appellant versus United States Department of Justice. Mr. Sobel for the appellant, Mr. Frank for the appellee.
Mr. Sobel, you've lost some of your audience.
I see that, Your Honor. Well, good morning. May it please the court, David Sobel, representing the appellant, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And at the outset, Your Honors, I want to emphasize how little Crewe seeks in this appeal. In the district court, we challenged DOJ's failure to submit a Vaughn index describing the withheld material and providing specific justifications for its withholding decisions. That, of course, is the normal procedure in a FOIA case, but in this case, DOJ refused to follow that course.
Well, you say normal, but we've said before that's not required in every FOIA case.
Well, Your Honor, I think unless the case falls within what we believe to be a narrow class of cases where there is an exception made to that requirement, it is the norm. I mean, in the Glomar context, for instance, which this case started out in and then kind of transitioned a bit, that type of exceptional case, the Glomar situation,
where
does
do
not require Vaughn indexes.
Where do you define the language that is exceptional cases? Just, our language would just seem to say some cases you need it and some you don't.
I think that's true, but if you look at the body of this this court's FOIA jurisprudence, I think it's fair to say that in the vast majority of the reported decisions, there are, in fact, Vaughn indices, and sometimes this court even goes so far in its effort to understand what's at issue to conduct its own in-camera review after the district court has done that. So I feel very comfortable in saying that in this case, the court has before it far less information about the material at issue than it typically does. For instance, the court doesn't have before it the quantity of material at issue here. There could be 10 documents, there could be 10,000 documents. We don't know that. So I would submit that in this case, the court is faced with the relatively unusual circumstance in which the government is asking the court to approve a blanket withholding of every word of the material that is responsive to the FOIA request, and that is an unusual circumstance. Now,
well, it's also coupled with a failure to make any segregability finding.
That's true, Your Honor, and I think what's interesting about this case is that the categorical issue that has been raised really does kind of segue into a segregability problem. Because, in effect, what the government is saying is that for categorical reasons, everything is withholdable, and as such, there's no requirement to conduct a segregability analysis. So that gets to a very important point from our perspective, which is that...
But the judge, even the judge didn't say what you just said. In other words, there was no segregability finding at all, as I understand it.
Well, I think the agency, in the context of advancing its categorical claim, paid lip service to the segregability requirement by saying, basically, because this is categorically exempt, there's nothing segregable.
Well, what I'm saying is there's a independent duty on the court to look at segregability.
There certainly is.
Whether it's raised or not. And that wasn't done here.
I don't believe it was done.
Well,
no,
I
don't think it could have been done under the circumstances below.
Is there such a duty on categorical 7C exemption case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is there such a duty on a categorical 7C exemption case?
Well, that's correct. That's what I say.
It's not correct. It's a question. It's not correct or incorrect. Is there such a duty in a 7C case where there's a categorical 7C claim?
No, that's my point. That
no, there's not a duty of segregability.
If this court were to agree that a categorical 7C exemption claim is appropriate, there would not be a requirement to segregate because
right.
that, in effect,
right.
is the impact of the categorical
right.
claim. So yes, certainly
yeah.
I think we're on the same
page.
Yes, we're on the same page with that. But you know, getting to the question of segregability. Crewe acknowledges that some amount of the material at issue here, possibly a substantial amount, is properly exempt from disclosure. The government
that would come in being only if we find that it was error on your principal argument to have accepted a categorical 7C exemption claim, right?
That is correct. And that, we believe, getting back to the limited nature of the request of the relief that we seek here, that is what we believe the appropriate process should be here, that the case should be remanded for preparation of a Vaughan index so that the court can make an intelligent decision as to what is exempt and what is not exempt, given and taking into account the large amount of publicly known information that is out there with respect to this information. It is not a secret that Mr. DeLay was the subject of an investigation. It is not a secret that multiple individuals associated with the Abramoff investigation publicly testified in proceedings below, in the district court below.
But you obviously believe that some things are secret.
Certainly. I mean, I cannot stand here.
How does it answer the question of the availability of 7C exemption to say, well, some things are known already, therefore there's no privacy to protect? That seemed to me to be your argument.
I'm not saying there is no privacy to protect. I think there is a more exacting analysis required under the circumstances of this case. This is not the type of situation where there was a fishing expedition and a party made a FOIA request to find out if an individual was the subject of an investigation. Mr. DeLay acknowledged that. That is what gave rise to this request. So the government's position that any scrap of material in this file would violate the privacy of Mr. DeLay if it was disclosed just can't be sustained. I think it's just a fundamental fact of this court's jurisprudence that once the secret is out of the bag, whether you look at the Nation magazine case or the Kimberlin decision, that is the result that the court needs to arrive at. Now, I'd like to say a bit about the public interest side of the scale, because both the Justice Department and the District Court gave very short shrift to the public interest here. And I find it hard to imagine how there could be a finding of no public interest or very little public interest in examination of the manner in which the Justice Department conducts ethics and corruption investigations of high-level officials. I think that is a point that has been recognized by this court. In the ACLU versus DOJ case, the court recognized that the agency's conduct of its law enforcement responsibilities is clearly, a matter of public concern. That case didn't even involve this kind of high-profile investigation of official corruption. So I think there's no question that the public interest was devalued in the district court, and I urge this court to recognize that public interest. I want to just turn very quickly to the Exemption 7A issue. I would like to reserve some of my time, but I just want to make the point that DOJ has also in this case relied upon a blanket categorical Exemption 7A claim, arguing that disclosure of any of this material would interfere with law enforcement proceedings. And again, looking at the range of circumstances present here, as this court requires, the district court gave no credence to the fact, didn't even raise the point, that this matter has been the subject of several public trials. Dozens of individuals have testified publicly with respect to the underlying investigation. And as a result, the range of circumstances simply precludes blanket reliance on Exemption 7A. I would like to reserve my remaining minute if the court has no further questions.
I do have one question. Is it a matter of record whether there are ongoing proceedings at this point?
At the moment, Your Honor, I cannot answer that question, because back when we were in district court, the government represented that there were a couple of sentencing proceedings that remained pending. I suspect that those have been concluded, but I cannot definitively represent that to the court.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Frank, can I ask you the same question? Are there ongoing proceedings?
I'm advised by the FBI that there is at least one ongoing proceeding involving an appeal to this court, involving a Fraser Vesuvio, which I believe was argued, yes, in November.
Yes. Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Frank, and seated with me at council table is Leonard Chaitman. I'd like to first address the Vaughan Index question because the plaintiffs in this case, I think feeling that their argument on the merits is not that strong, have fallen back to this, all we're asking for is a remand for a stronger Vaughan Index. And Judge Sintel is entirely correct that this circuit has made it clear that a formal Vaughan Index with a line-by-line, sentence-by-sentence description is not required in all cases. The court has also made it clear in Kimberlin and a whole series of cases that the government can provide the equivalent in a declaration. The court has also made it clear that we don't have to provide a sentence-by-sentence, line-by-line, or even document-by-document description. The court made it very clear in Gallant versus NLRB, which is cited in our brief, that the government can provide category-by-category descriptions of the documents and then provide the reasoning, the exemption and the reasoning, why they're withholding. And that is precisely what Mr. Hardy did here in this case, and I would draw the court's attention to his affidavits, to his affidavit at pages 36 of the Joint Appendix, 38, 44, and 47.
And we've never said that a declaration that is overly general will satisfy the requirements of an appropriate Vaughan Index or the requirement of segregability. I don't know how you get around the requirement of segregability. There are no findings here on that at all.
Well, what I did say, I agree with Your Honor, that a bare-bones conclusory affidavit would not be acceptable. But if the court will review the affidavit of Mr. Hardy, I think they'll find that's not the case here. What the court has said is that declarations can be provided in lieu of a formal Vaughan Index, and it is said that in categorical cases, it's said repeatedly that in categorical cases, the government's declaration can be basically categorical as long as it adequately describes the documents that are being withheld. And in this case, Mr. Hardy, on page 36, paragraph 35, describes the two types of documents, records that are being withheld. There's two types here. It's the FBI's investigatory files, and it's Form 302 and the inserts, which are basically interview files. He describes those in detail. He explains what FOIA exemption applies and why that applies. And we would submit that that is more than adequate under Gallant. I think that plaintiff has conceded, in effect, that there's no duty to do a segregability analysis, as Judge Sintel asked, under a categorical case such as Exemption 7C. I would point out that Mr. Hardy did do a segregability analysis in his declaration at Joint Appendix 34, paragraph 29, in which he said that the material is not segregable. And you know, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, their FOIA request was for everything having to do with Congressman DeLay and this investigation. So everything in there is about Mr. DeLay and allegations of misconduct. So what are you going to segregate out? That's what it's all about. I would like to turn briefly to the merits, and I think the case that really governs this is NARFI, the National Association of Retired Federal Employees, where this court famously said something outweighs nothing every time. And I think that's what you have here. Plaintiffs just conceded that there was some privacy interest here. And all the government has to show is that there's a non-de minimis privacy interest. All the things that plaintiff has raised, he was a famous guy here in Washington and it was notorious.
The concession,
I beg your pardon?
I may have missed the concession.
I think he said that there was some privacy interest to protect. And that's all we have to show is that there's – we don't really have to quantify and say, it's the greatest privacy interest in the world, just a non-de minimis privacy interest. And I think we have that here in spite of the fact that he might be have been a firmly
offended. Well, you're assuming no public interest.
I beg your pardon?
You're assuming no public interest.
Well, I'm going to get to that when I say something outweighs nothing. Now, the district court, I will say in its opinion, said, okay, let's assume that there's some minor public interest, but it's still outweighed by the privacy interest. The reason that I would say that there's either no public interest, and I think, or a minimal public interest, and I think this is critical, and this is what disposes of a lot of these cases. The problem here, Your Honors, is that the information plaintiff seeks will tell a lot about Mr. Gillette. But that's not what FOIA is all about. FOIA is about showing what the government is up to.
Is it not more than possible that it will also reveal a good deal about how the FBI conducted the investigation?
Well, Your Honor, plaintiffs, no, is the answer to your question. It won't show anything really extraordinary. The FBI,
I didn't say extraordinary. It doesn't have to be extraordinary.
It will show the FBI conducted its investigation the way they normally conduct investigations.
How do we know that?
They will.
How do we know that without them being able to get the information they're seeking?
Well, the problem is they have not alleged any misconduct on the part of the FBI, and they don't have to do that. They don't have to do that. But in this case, the problem with that theory, plaintiff's theory, which is that what we want to see generally if the FBI, how they conducted their investigation. We're curious, you know, how they did it.
Did they pull their punches, or on the other hand, did they overbear?
They want to, yeah. The problem with that.
They want to know that, and wouldn't it be at the very least possible that these the data they're seeking would reveal that?
Your Honor, it is correct. But the problem with that is that would apply to every case.
No, it wouldn't. This, you've got the overlay of the public corruption.
Right. Well, I don't know how your public interest argument was really weird. How you could say there's no public interest here when you have the overlay of this huge corruption issue. It doesn't make sense. That you shouldn't push that argument.
Yeah.
That's a silly argument.
Well,
it's just, and you said it with such conviction in the brief, and you repeated it. It's a bad argument.
Well, Your Honor,
it's all public corruption. It's that we worry about that. Hopefully, in the United States, we're still worrying about it over and over and over again. And yeah, people get excited and interested. Well, what's going on? Why did the government do or not do what it did?
I understand, Your Honor.
There's something on the other side of the scale.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Well, now you're up to absolutely. You started with quoting the seminal D.C. Circuit. You can weigh something against nothing and always win. That's not this case.
Your Honor, perhaps I was being over, just being polite
excited.
When I said absolutely.
I know you're excited.
But I think that what this court has said in Safeguard and
That doesn't mean it applies in this case.
Well, but they said, you said that the FOIA public interest is not to serve as a watchdog over investigations. If the court were to make an exception, carve out an exception for public corruption cases, and I don't necessarily see why they should do that. That's not in Reporters Committee. I don't think there's
it's
a
not
single
an exception. It's whether there's some public interest here. There is a public interest here. Mm-hmm.
But the question is,
the way you're arguing, there'd never be a public interest unless someone could come in advance and have credible evidence to suggest that the agency committed a wrongdoing. That can't be it.
That is not it. I'll give you a good example. Your Honor is 100% correct there, and I'm not just being polite there. Yeah, Your Honor is 100% correct that there are instances where a plaintiff, a FOIA requester, comes in and requests information, and they're not allegations of impropriety, but there is a public interest. And as a matter of fact, the two instances that are good instances, good exceptions, are cases that plaintiff has cited. One is Nation's Magazine. There was no allegation of misconduct in that case, but there was a public interest in finding out whether or not the government was privatizing its responsibilities, the customer service, to a private individual. So that was a good public interest. Also in ACLU, there was a real public interest in that case in seeing whether or not how the government's warrantless cell phone tracking was working. Those are legitimate public interests. I would urge the court not to carve out a public interest in public corruption cases because...
What do you mean carve out?
Carving it out?
Yeah, what do you mean carve out? Isn't there an evident public interest in public corruption cases?
If there's
an inherent public interest, it would seem to be that kind of case.
If it would say something about what the government is up to, and I would submit that...
That takes us back to what I was asking you a while ago. If you're looking at 302s, were hard to get when you're defending the person who got interviewed, but
the problem
the 302s
is
and the tracking of the 302s would, could tell you a good deal about what the FBI was up to.
Well, it'll tell you who they interviewed and all that sort of thing. The problem is, be prepared, because on Crew's website, they got a whole list, they have a whole section devoted to corrupt public officials, and they got 10 or 15 public corruption cases, senators, congressmen, who they allege are under investigation or have been in the past.
I don't see how that answers any of our questions. They've got a lot of others out there. Maybe they should have a lot of others out there. So what?
Well, I would say without more, this court has made very clear that FOIA is not meant to be a general watchdog over government agencies in a public corruption case or any other case. And I would submit that even if, and that's what the district court said, that even the district court agreed with what you're saying. Judge Leon, you don't have to overturn Judge Leon to come to your conclusion. He agreed in the last page of his opinion that there might be some kind of public interest, as the court is saying, but that it would be overcome by the privacy interest in this case.
Isn't that your better argument?
I'm getting a sense that it is.
Late in the game.
Thank you for your time.
Does Mr. Sobel have any time? Yes, I know you do. That's right. Okay.
Thank you. I'll agree with counsel that something outweighs nothing, but in this case it seems to me that the something, the very powerful something, is the public interest, and maybe there's not nothing on the privacy scale.
Yeah, you can concede there's nothing on the privacy scale. If there's nothing there, counsel, you wouldn't be looking.
Your Honor, I acknowledged earlier that there is some limited privacy interest, but not the one that the government advances, which is one that would extend to every scrap of information in these files. Perhaps Mr. DeLay had some medical condition that was revealed. Perhaps there were something about relationships he had that have not been publicly known. It would be foolish to say that there would be nothing in these files, but again, I don't know how many documents are at issue, but I will concede that there is likely to be something. But to discount the public interest, as both the government and the district court have done here, is just hard to square with the situation that's present here and the relevant case law. The Reporters Committee case, which the government has relied on, the Rapshees case, the court hearkened back to its earlier decision in Department of Air Force versus Rose, the Exemption 6 case that involved summaries of Air Force Academy disciplinary proceedings. And noted that in that circumstance, since the names of the cadets who were investigated was not known, that those could properly be redacted, but that the summaries of the proceedings of what actually occurred should be made public. And the Supreme Court in Reporters Committee hearkened back to that case.
But the actual result of Reporters Committee was they didn't have to disclose, right?
But that was because the court found there was nothing informative about government activity in what it described as the dry compilation that was contained in rap sheets. But when the court in Reporters Committee talked about what had occurred in Rose, the court said the summaries of the investigations obviously contained information that would explain how the disciplinary procedures actually functioned and therefore were an appropriate subject of a FOIA request. That is entirely analogous to the situation here, as Your Honor, Judge Sentell recognized that, yes, there is going to be a lot in this material that is going to explain how the FBI conducted its investigation. And it's a bit inconsistent for the government on the one hand to say that, as counsel did, that this information might tell a lot about Mr. DeLay but nothing about agency action, and then say, but there's no recognized interest under FOIA to second-guess or act as a watchdog. Well, either the information says something about what the agency did here or it didn't, and we submit it says quite a lot, and the public interest is manifest.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.